Dare to Dream with Debbie Dashinger.
Welcome to Dare to Dream. This is Debbie Dashinger. Hey, beautiful people. Today we are talking to Adam Apollo, who's a planetary ambassador, exopolitical advisor, martial artist, and Jedi. Dare to Dream podcast won 3 Talk Radio Positive Change Awards, won the COVR Award for Best Radio and Podcast Show. Welt Magazine named Dare to Dream one of the top 20 best podcasts to listen to this year, and it's high ranking under self-improvement on Apple Podcasts. This show is sponsored by Dr. Dane here in Access Consciousness. They do energy work. If you'd like to find one of their classes, go to drdanehere.com. That's H-E-E-R.com. I'm Debbie Dashinger. I'm a media visibility specialist. I'm a book writing coach. I also take your book to a guaranteed international bestseller. And finally, I teach spiritual entrepreneurs, spiritual messengers, how to be booked on radio and podcast and get massive results. Right now, I have something going on. There are 2 openings. I also do publicity work. I only take on a handful of people, and I do publicity work for them to get them booked on radio and podcast. And so I only have 2 openings. It is very rare. If you are interested, email support@debbiedashinger.com. We'll have a conversation. And just so you know, who is the right person, not just be a spiritual messenger. It's better for me, fit-wise, if you have an established business, if you're very knowledgeable about what you do, if you've already been interviewed, and obviously, if you have the willingness to start booking things on your calendar and gain way more visibility. So I'm very excited about my guest today. It's Adam Apollo, who has offered insights on global transitions, physics, technology, human spirituality, and the future as a next generation leadership ambassador at the White House, in multiple Nexus and other summits at the United Nations, and at conferences and festivals around the world. He is an active faculty member, author, and the lead systems architect for several international online academies, including the Resonance Academy for Unified Physics and the Guardian Alliance Academy for Self-Mastery, with over 150,000 active students of all ages from around the world across these schools. Adam has been featured on Gaia TV shows, Coast to Coast AM on multiple occasions, feature films, and more. Over the past years, Adam Apollo supported development of new quantum computer resistant encryption system with Crown Sterling and advised on many cryptocurrency initiatives. To learn more about him, go to adamapollo.com. Also in the show notes, you will find another link. Adam and myself and many other amazing notable speakers are going to be presenting this September in Glastonbury, UK, at the Portal to Ascension Glastonbury UK conference. Again, both his website and to get tickets to be with us and hear us speak in September will be in the show notes. And with that, I welcome the amazing Adam Apollo to Dare to Dream. It's great to have you.
Thank you so much, Debbie. It's great to be here with you again. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, pleasure. Did I read on Instagram that you have something going on deeper than your past interviews with Gaia TV, right? You're going to be doing what, like a series or something?
Well, Gaia's flirted with me about having my own show for a long time. It hasn't happened yet, but I was just featured in the Divine Science series that they just released, which is pretty amazing. I'm in a lot of the different episodes covering a lot of my core material and content. So yeah, that's available now, and I'm excited for people to check that out.
Great. Mm-hmm. Congratulations. I am really like so curious about you, Adam, because I've experienced you in so many different ways. This is the second time you're on the show. I've heard you speak at many conferences. Mm-hmm. I have attended your retreat. And even your online course. And I get so fascinated. Like, what makes you you? I know that's a wild, big question, but how does one human being, I ask myself, comprehend that much data and material. So I want to know, dude, like, what are you plugging into? Where is that blood transfusion coming from?
Yeah, well, you know, it's interesting because we're in this time right now where we're developing these different models of intelligence, and AI is this interesting mirror or reflection of how we know what we know, how we process language, how we store data, how we store information inside of ourselves and inside of our being. And what they're finding is that there's a deep connection between the ability to recognize patterns and the ability to express intelligence. And so a lot of what we're starting to see is the root of intelligence and knowledge is actually the patterns that we form between different connections of data and information. Now, I lay that as a little foundation because when I was in high school, I ended up having this vision when I was 15 years old, and I just discovered I had energy. And the vision was of this interconnection between all the scale layers of the universe, starting, you know, with an eye going out to a person, a field, a continent, a planet, the Earth, Moon system, the solar system, the galactic clusters, the entire universe, and then the threads of seemingly infinite universes forming the threads that make up a proton, and protons forming an atom, atoms forming molecules and DNA, and then cells and then tissues creating an eye. And this vision that I had, I spent years unpacking when I was in high school, and it led to something that is a big part of my major work, which is called a unified harmonic matrix. And this matrix of connections between all the layers of the universe has a lot of very foundational principles in it around what makes something physical or physical experience, and what are the elements of physical experience? What are the harmonic or vibrations of our emotional experience? What are the structures of our mental experience? And what are the most primary structures of our mental experience? And then interpersonal, communicative, and so on. You can kind of follow the chakras and see and understand what I'm getting at and talking about. But I formed this model as a teenager. And what was really interesting for me around that is that as I learned things, as I had past life memories, as I studied different philosophies or different books, I found there was direct ways that I could sort that knowledge and that information into this patterned structure that I had brought through from other times and recalled for myself to be able to use in this time. So I think I just developed a really strong pattern recognition formula. And that pattern recognition formula lets me integrate vast amounts of knowledge and or aspects of myself more easily, simply because I can discern or separate the elementals and the energies on the physical, emotional, mental level, interpersonal level, Akashic level, spiritual level, and the celestial level, essentially. So that would be my best guess at why I can store a lot of information. Because it's not that I think about it, and it's not that it's, you know, hardwired knowledge. And I mean, I forget people's names all the time. I have areas where I've got plenty of challenges in how I accept and deal with new information. But as long as I can sift, you know, kind of stitch it into this core matrix of wisdom that's, I believe, is really the universal intelligence, then it's easy for me. It's just comes like as naturally as swordplay, you know?
He would say, because he's good at that too. Well, I find that amazing. That's a great answer, and fascinating to me that that's how your brain would operate, because your massive understanding of quantum physics and of different species and planets, what they look like, what they like to do, how they're connected with us. And I mean, you know, this is just very basic stuff about what you do. And I know right now you're delving into sacred sexuality. So It's pretty, for someone like me, phenomenal, you know, that you can not only be curious, but then comprehend, digest, and be able to feed back to people something, these patterns that you're putting together in a way that can be received out here about so many subjects and even technologically what you create. So.
Thank you. Yeah. And, you know, it's not that I'm just delving into sacred sexuality. For your viewers, I'm opening a course tomorrow. If you're on YouTube watching this, you can jump over and watch my Divine Sex introduction, on YouTube. But the course is, you know, I've had people for a very long time ask me to do this course. And I would think actually that my numbers of the people filling the course would be a lot bigger because of that. But it's, you know, this is an edgy topic area, and it's taken me a long time to get to a place where I'm just like, you know what? I don't care. Like, if you want to judge me because I want to help people actually have beautiful, thriving sexual experiences, and, you know, cancel me because you think, you know, that it's wrong or a bad idea to talk about sexuality or to make that, you know, a major topic if you're someone who's a scientist or someone who's a theorist or someone who's a technology person. We have a lot of ways that we judge people right now. And for me, I've just gotten to this point where, like, I don't really care about the judgments and I don't really care about what people think of me. I'm going to continue doing my work and my service because I know what I have that can help people, and I want to give that gift as much as I possibly can. And, you know, I'm building big systems too. So, like, a lot of my life is wrapped up in the construction of these massive systems that can help make, you know, much vaster change than I can do on my own. But I also really treasure it when I have these opportunities to jump in and teach a group of people and to carry them through some stories and some journeys and some practices that will potentially fundamentally change their whole lives. And I'm also doing a retreat in May that I'm really excited about. It's a little over a month away in Ibiza, and it's just the venue is just gorgeous, and we're going to go to the cave of Tanit and honor the goddess Ishtar and do beautiful ceremony there. And we're going to go to the Ezvedra and the beach of Atlantis. And turns out this island is one of the three most powerful magnetic sites on the planet, extremely powerful site. And just being in person with people and training and working on energy and learning psychic abilities and connecting deeply and entering these profound states of realization where everyone gets the sort of deeper experience of what it's like to be fully connected to everything and to each other and to their power and to who they really are. I mean, it's just one of my favorite things in the world. So I'm really excited that I've, you know, decided to put some of my work and my teaching in that way out there a little bit more this year. So.
So cool. And I just want to, you know, for just a moment, touch on the sacred sexuality. Tom Kenyon is coming on next week, and I'm incredibly excited about that because he unknowingly changed my life. But however many years ago, when I read the Magdalene manuscripts, I mean, first of all, what a beautiful channeling about Magdalene and Yeshua and their sacred relationship, their sacred sexuality relationship, amongst other things. And that is how they met, because Magdalene was in this temple of Isis as a practitioner of sacred sexuality. And this is very ancient when you say the word sacred sexuality in a very puritanical society, that this dates back gabillions of years, these various practices in many cultures. And it is the inception of creation. It is the inception of intimacy, of knowing one's soul, of being connected with source. So I just want to put that out there. The people who need that and want that, you're on call. So if you are excited, go to adamapollo.com and check it out. Highly recommended, for sure.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, and I'm happy to give a link directly to the course as well. It's just, I think it's just bit.ly/divine-sex is the link to it. But yeah, it's sacred sexuality is so foundational to everything. I mean, we don't really, think about this on a daily basis, but we came from sex. Everything came from sex. The plants, the animals, all of it around us, all of it exists because of sex. And if you really kind of break it down, when you look at what are the kind of states of experience or what are the kind of methods to getting to states of divine, transcendent experience of the divine, of God, of the everything, of, merging with the infinite eternal, it's a lot harder to get there when you're sitting on a rock and meditating and having to ignore, the painful hard ground under your butt, and the air and the heat and the sun and the birds and the things. Like, it's really good. And that is one pathway to essentially finding a way out of and obliterating the mental noise and constructs that sort of keep us from the listening that we need to access these states. But when you're in the experience of pleasure and deep and profound pleasure, the processes that it opens up inside of us, the surges of energy that arise inside of us, are literally driving us towards those states. And the more we know how to release our resistance and open our channels and sort of disarm a lot of the places inside of us that have armored up and resisted against that energy flow, when we break down that resistance, the energy just flows. And if you allow the energy to really flow, you can enter these multi-orgasmic waves and states where you're in a standing experience of being fully immersed in the infinite eternal, and enter non-duality states where you're merged with your lover and you're experiencing everything as God, goddess, everything, all the way down to the drip of sweat on your skin, every single sensation, every single moment is actually an experience of communion, deep and profound communion. And those states can be held and continued and stayed in for amazing, cycles of time, and they can be profoundly life-changing to be able to go through those kinds of initiations and those portals with each other. And how beautiful is it that we also, in those states, get to experience the divine, not just as ourselves, which is usually the case. If you take any of the masculine sort of spiritual paths and religious paths, you're alone. You're by yourself in the temple, you're in the prayer, and it's you and yourself, and that's it. But in these states, you can go there with somebody else, and you can experience simultaneously what it's like to be an embodiment of the divine and in the energy of the God, goddess, and the experience of perfect love, power, and bliss rolling through all of creation. And why wouldn't we hold that as one of the most precious and sacred aspects of our experience as human beings? Why would we not?
Why would we not? Oh my God, that's so yummy. Thank you for that.
Yeah.
Never known anyone to take a sacred sexuality class and walk away and go, God, bummer. I really regret that.
Yeah.
It's life-changing, this
Such a
information.
boring course. What did I do? Yeah.
I love this conversation.
Thank
So
you.
you mentioned something, and I want to delve into that because this is really interesting to me. Akashic records. So I think most of us know there's a very spiritual UFO channeling tribe out there. Akashic records, of course. So a lot of people have used it for personal things to get a reading,
Yeah.
finding out about their life, about past lives. And frankly, one of my clients is a master at Akashic records. So I know from her, she talks about you can bring any question in the world to the Akashic records and get answers and guidance. But I think what you talk about, Adam, is galactic and beyond. I've had a galactic Akashic record reading, which I found life-changing. How do you explain this, the physics of space-time, suggesting that Akashic records are all around us? Take us through that. First of all, what does that, if you can, look like,
yeah,
the illusion
sure.
of that? And then what does that mean for us?
Yeah, well, a lot of people, when they talk about the Akashic records, there's this sort of, all you have to do is just imagine this space that's like a giant library and it's got infinite books in it. And all the knowledge of the universe is inside of all those books. So all you have to do is, you know, locate the information that you need, and everything that you need about something or someone is there, which is a very interesting meditation and is a beautiful experience and can get you starting to recognize that there might be more information than you just have inside yourself that's accessible to you if you choose to open up to it. But there's a lot more to it than that, because it turns out that if we look at the physics of the universe and the structure of the universe itself, every single proton in every piece of matter around us. Now, most people, if you're confused about the word proton, everything's made of, you know, atoms. Atoms make up molecules. Molecules form the structures like a table or a glass of water or an object of different kind. You know, we discern that this is a piece of copper versus, you know, this sphere, which is stone, not because one is, you know, hard and the other's not. They're both hard. They're both spheres. They both have, you know, structure, but the molecular structure is different. And so the atoms in them are different. This one's really heavy. It's metal and it's copper. And this one has all of these beautiful light refractions and things in it. And so we know it's a crystal, it's a type of stone. And inside of those atoms are the protons, and the protons are the actual weight. They're the mass of these structures. And if we look at the number of vacuum fluctuations, or you could say quantum bits of information, just like in your computer, you've got certain amounts of gigabits of data, right? You look at the number of little oscillating bits that could exist in each one of these protons, and it turns out that the number of bits of information is the same as the number of what we call Planck seconds in the lifetime of the whole universe. Now, that's a ridiculous coincidence. In fact, it can't be a coincidence. The number is 10 to the 60th. That's a one with 60 zeros after it, right? So the fact that they happen to have that same number of information bits as we've had Planck seconds in the lifetime of the universe, there's no way that could be a coincidence. So what does it mean? Well, it must mean that there's a direct relationship between every single proton, which makes up your whole body, every object around you, and everything in the universe around you. There's a direct correlation between the information in each proton and the time that's passed in the universe. So in other words, every proton is remembering and growing with every moment that passes in the universe. So that means that all the protons around you, all the objects around you, actually have memory of everything that's ever happened in the universe, all the way back to the very beginning of the universe. In fact, the atoms that are in your cup of coffee or inside of your hand may have been part of a supernova and were previously part of a galaxy, and they were previous part of another planet that was, you know, that star eventually exploded and that matter got spread across the universe. It ended up coming to Earth through a meteorite. It ended up breaking off in the atmosphere, get carrying in the water cycle, and then ended up being part of some water that you drank as a child that happens to now be in your hand, right? So if all of this stuff is remembering, then the Akashic record, the actual record of everything that's ever happened, is imprinted into the matter around us. Now, it's really interesting. We use this word matter. We all talk about it's all matter. But matter and the word mother or mater is the same word. So if you're looking for where is the great mother, where is the divine goddess, she is the matter all around you. She is literally the memory of everything that's ever happened. She is all time and experience. The great mother, the great goddess, is actually completely embedded in everything all around you, including your own body.
What does this mean then? The protons, the memory, that since the beginning of time, this potentially could be in us. It certainly could be in the water, in the rocks, in the metals, in the mountains, and so forth. As far as creation, so if there's anything that somebody wants to create, how do they access this in order to set into motion that which they prefer and want to experience?
Well, manifestation is a little bit of a different process. And you could say in many ways that if the divine yin, the great receptive, the great accepting principle, the loving principle, the receiving principle of the universe is the past and everything that's ever happened. Because really, what can you do with the past? You can basically accept it or not. That's it. That's your choice. You either receive what's happened before or you don't. You reject it. You deny it. You try to block it. You resist it. But the more you accept the past and the more you accept everything that's ever happened and truly love and accept yourself for it, then you're really experiencing the divine feminine principle, because everything is seen to be as part of a bigger pattern. It's all okay. It's all beautiful. It's all perfect. But if you want to create in the future, well, that's the divine masculine. That's the divine yang principle. That's the creative power, the creative spark. And so inside of us, in every moment, wherever we have set our intention, we form and come into tension with that which we will into being. So we are radiating out the light, the energy, the thought patterns, the feelings, the resonant, all of that radiation, that expression in us in many ways is the divine masculine. That's the god to the goddess, right? The outward creative flow to the inward receptive flow. And they're both always happening at the same time. But what's interesting is that in between, there's a little event horizon that happens, right? A little gateway that's passed through. And that gateway is you and your personal journey and your personal experience throughout time. So for example, anyone who tries to read the Akashic Records, it doesn't matter whether you're reading them from the atoms that happen to be the same exact protons that were in a giant, you know, stone at Stonehenge or at Avebury or in Egypt. You know, those protons have been there for hundreds of thousands to millions of years. You know, they were in that same stone, even when that stone was in the ground and it got moved to that place. If I'm reading that information, if I'm receiving the codes that are stored in the consciousness and the knowledge stored inside of a stone in the Pyramid of Egypt, I'm still going to translate that information based on my own lens and my own constructs. Mm-hmm. My belief systems and my ideas will filter that information and make it fit to what I think is acceptable and okay. And this is why channeling is really tricky. And it's also why there's a lot of information that you can get out there from people who have just opened up to receiving the information from the universe that is heavily filtered by their particular lens. And we all do it. We can't take ourselves out of the equation, right? We are always going to be in that equation. But that being said, there is a place where we can find truth, real absolute truth, truth that is the bridge between us. And that place is actually through our relationships, because we're all entangled with everything else. The protons are not just floating around by themselves. They're all connected. They're all networked throughout the universe. So the whole universe is this living light lattice information network. It's like the most fantastic internet you could ever imagine. And it's got intelligence built into it. It's not artificial intelligence. It's the principle of intelligence that literally drives everything. And so we, when we are in connection and having a conversation, when I'm receiving from you and you're receiving from me, or the people out there are hearing from me, we are in a state of relationship. And through me sharing my experiences and you coming back and saying, hey, I relate to that. In fact, I've had the same experience and I saw it this way. Now we suddenly have a little bit more of the crystal of the truth. And the more we can plug in each person's perspective on the same thing, the more we'll see the totality of what is actually true. And this is how I've done galactic history work and past life work, is not in isolation by myself sitting in a room going, oh my gosh, I was so-and-so, or I had this experience, or I was this. But in the real dynamics of dealing with karmas and sanskaras and challenges and growth and love with other people, so that I could know that their experience and my experience match. And even then, I don't even think it's proved then. And usually it takes a third party that comes in and their experience matches mine and another person's. Now I have something to work with. In the power of the Trinity, I can now see more of the truth of what actually was, what is, and what will be.
Yeah, you've had some extraordinary experiences. I don't know that most people do, in that you've gotten these downloads of really specific past lives and looked at somebody across the room and gone, oh my God, you were. And that person has come up and verified. And then the other person, you know, all these other people come up with the different characters they were in this lifetime. How gratifying, first of all, and powerful to have this pattern unfold for you. And so,
thank you.
Yeah, what are the other ways, Adam, that you deal with? And it's funny, this thing about protons, because it has come up so much on this show around healing and around accessing and around its potentiality. So what is its potential in what you're talking about and how it is all around us?
Yeah, I mean, the potential of what I'm talking about is limitless. There is no bounds I could put on it. It's the recognition that there is living memory in everything that you interconnect with. I mean, just that alone is mind-blowing. I mean, it means that your cup remembers things. It means that your money remembers that you held it at one point. Right? Like every dollar, every object, everything, every gas, a bit of gas in your car, all of it remembers. And that harder things, like harder forms of matter, stones, metal, crystals, objects, they remember for a lot longer because the shared memory structure of those protons stays in the same place for a very long time. Whereas things like water, ocean and water is very more like short-term memory, a lot of it, where it's like it will remember something really clearly right after it's happened. And then that water changes and it moves and it's carrying parts of that information and mixing it with other information. And so we're in this living experience of the universe that is conscious. And this is really, really important to get to in our journey as spiritual beings, is into the sense of a relationship with the sacred, in which the sacred is not an idea. The sacred is the actual presence around us. The sacred is the chair that's holding you up. The sacred is the ground that you're standing on. The sacred is the sun's warmth, and the sacred is the wind in the trees. That this all is sacred. And that cultivating that relationship has been one of the most profound and transformative processes throughout my life. And I had to kind of, you know, you make it sound really light and blissful to be like, yes, oh my God, I remembered this person and they remembered me, and amazing, right? Like, wow, like that's so cool, and like aren't I cool? But it's actually not like that at all. It's been a very challenging journey for me that I've chosen, because guess what? I remember killing people. I remember being killed in a variety of ways. I remember dying of disease. I remember going through the most heartbreaking, heart-wrenching loss of having loved ones that I love killed, of basically battling my own son to the death in a lifetime. I mean, it, and these things, these kinds of memories are really hard to deal with. It's not something that you ask for. It's not like, oh, you know, I want to know all of this, you know, pain so that I can have all this pain again. It's not really like that. It's more like I want to know who I am. And because I want to know who I am so badly, and because I want to know my journey through time, and I want to have integrated the mistakes that I've made in the past so that I can be in greater service now, so that I can accept myself for my faults, so that I can be more loving and gracious to others now. It's because of the things that I want to cultivate in who I am that it's worth it to face those painful memories, that it's worth it to be able to see those aspects of myself and know where I succeeded and where I didn't, and what I did right and what I could have done differently, and how my choices have led me to the who I am right now.
Yeah, I think
And
that's the hero heroine journey that you're talking about, because everybody has that crucifix, if you will, that they face, right? And it could have been their childhood and things that happened. It could have been things they did. It could have been past lives, etc. But I think the really important component of what you're saying, Adam, is for all of us, when we get to those crossroads, what are you going to do with that information? Because one can be bitter, angry, resentful, many things, right? Or we can transcend that with the need to know self and heal self to become whole. And therefore, on the other side of all of this, for the hero heroine's journey, the denouement really is that there is a softness that comes about. There's a compassion and an empathy and a depth to be able to love that one would not have without going through that fire.
Exactly. And it is a forging fire. You know, it's a fire of both transformation and destruction and forging. You know, the destruction is the consumption and breakdown of the judgments that we've had upon ourselves. It's the way that we have created boundaries and resistance and armor in order to protect ourselves from the pain. And in doing so, we've actually protected ourselves from being who we really are and sharing our truth and being transparent and being honest and being real and all the things. We have our society is full of people with tons of armor on. It's just invisible armor. And the fire is really there to break down that armor and to transform the nature of it, to begin to reveal the real tender beauty inside the painful experiences and inside of the journey of our growth through the facing of our shadows. And, you know, I like to often refer to the shadows as like seeds down underground. And it takes that warmth of that fire, that transformation, that warmth, whether that's the sun or even a forest fire will do this. It will actually crack open the seeds. And those seeds will then begin to sprout from under the ground. And it's still got all this pressure on it. It's still got all this, you know, it's stuck inside the soil. Seeds sometimes are even under concrete in where streets, you know, have been paved. And they have to push their way out that Aries direction. And a lot of us are feeling this dynamic in major ways right now because we had a total solar eclipse conjunct Chiron in Aries, you know, and the North Node right there too. And it's like we've been feeling this tremendous pressure to grow and to push our way through, but you can't just force it. It's actually like, it's more like standing up than it is, you know, shoving your way through something or cutting your way through something. Mm-hmm. And as we learn how to stand up against with all the pressure and actually be in our strength, we can have the power to actually break not only through the soil, but through the concrete that has been laid, that's been armoring and keeping us from the full experience of ourselves. And we can actually break through that and begin to experience the real beauty of who we are, which includes all the things that we've judged as being wrong with us, which includes all our shadows and all of our painful experiences.
Absolutely. I mean, this is really very profound because, I mean, someday I'm going to sit down with somebody very safe and go through this. Mm. But I think anybody who knows me, I mean, I'm complicated as most people are. I'm definitely fierce and I definitely create, you know, I'm big on that. And I love, love, love. Like I have a huge heart. And anyone who knows me and is in, you know, my inner circle knows how deeply I love, how passionate I am. And what's fascinating about what you're saying is there are from time to time visions that come up inside of me that are so horrific, so unthinkable. And exactly what you just said, judging ourselves, I judge those visions. Like, where is that coming from? Like, how does that even exist inside of me, even in a moment? And I've had to reconcile because we have all been all things. We have been the persecutor, the persecuted. We have, you know, there. I've heard fascinating stories from shamans who have been on this show who just, for instance, abhorred the conquistadors. And then they were in their lineage as part of their growth would take them on this journey. And in the journey, they literally went back to the past and they went, oh my God, I was a conquistador. So to come to terms with all these layers of what we've been. And for me, I have a modicum, I will say honestly, of peace yet with some of what I see to think like, wow, I have inflicted things that are, it's in this lifetime, unthinkable.
Yeah.
And to release the judgment around that and send that being so much love to make a different choice, please. Yeah. And, you know, even put that lifetime or those actions to rest, like no more. If everything's concurrent, this doesn't have to exist anymore. I send you love. Very interesting experience.
Yeah. And I would say that it's not that the experience itself dissolves or goes away. It's just that you come into a harmonic, coherent relationship with it. So once you're in a harmonic, coherent relationship with some part of you and some part of the past, there's no friction anymore. It's just integrated. It's just part of you, right? When you're in resistance of it or judgment of it, you're in friction with it. And guess what? That friction's going to rub on you and it's going to rub until it really hurts, you know, and we have parts of us always that are facing friction in certain areas of growth and other areas that we're in much more integration and coherence with. And that journey isn't something that just stops. It's not like you just go and, oh, I'm done with all the friction, you know. Like it's not quite like that. So you're always going to be, you know, in this dynamic, and friction sometimes is good. You know, friction can gestate the energy necessary for us to grow in certain ways. So there may be certain things that you're in friction with that you're choosing to be in friction with, just like you might choose to go to the gym and it doesn't always feel great when your muscles are hurting and you're stretching and everything's burning and it's difficult, but you're creating the right kind of friction that's going to help you grow and become stronger. Mm-hmm. And so that's like intentional choice. Now, I think our subconscious tends to naturally kind of drive us into friction with different dynamics in our lives in order to facilitate strength and growth, whether we're conscious of it or not. But the more we embrace those aspects of our subconscious and love ourselves, even for the challenges that we create in our lives, Well, the more those challenges that are arising become part of your conscious creative process, and you realize that there's a reason that you're doing that for yourself. There's a reason why this is happening. There's a reason why things are, you know, the way they are in whatever area they are in your life where you're facing that challenge. It might be relationships, it might be with money, it might be with your career, it might be with your creativity. All of those, you know, all the different areas of your life can have these times where you're struggling and your intention. And we can often go, but why? You know, and you're like, my life is great, except for right here. It really sucks. And what's going on with that? But we've created that challenge in that area because there's this huge opportunity to evolve there right now. And we have to be able to look at and unpack and really separate and discern this particular part of our life and know what it is that we need to do differently to hold that piece better. Because the more each one of the parts of our life come online and get fulfilled in their nature, the more all of our life does. It can empower us everywhere. You know, I've had a very interesting experience of having extreme wealth in certain areas of my life and, you know, at times complete lack of wealth financially, but somehow still manage to bring through the wealth in the other areas of my life in order to live in a way that feels healthy and wealthy and full of life and beauty for me, right? But I've noticed that for me, because I have such powerful superpowers in certain areas, I pick really specific areas, you know, at a conscious or subconscious level to work on, to be my weaknesses, to be the things that I have to develop and strength and practice in, which humble me, that bring me back down to my knees of like, okay, I got to learn. I got to grow in this way. I got to develop this part of myself. So I think it's really a beautiful self-education process that we're all in through the facing of our shadows and our traumas and our difficulty.
I'm really curious, Adam, if you have experienced divinity. And if you have experienced divinity, what was that experience like?
I mean, Debbie, I experienced divinity a lot. you know, my life has been, I would say, a series of stitches between experiencing the polarity of my, you know, aspects of my humanity and myself and my feelings of loss and limit and death of family and death of loved ones and the sort of way that we can feel like we're so far away from some sense of divine perfection that we think we're lost and we think that there's no way back. And it breaks us down to the point of we have to surrender something. We have to surrender a part of ourselves. But interestingly enough, all the way back at that end, when you have that surrender there, sometimes that surrender can actually end you up completely at the other end of the spectrum, or essentially it's more like a circle. And you cross over that point in the circle where suddenly now you're aware of the divine perfection in everything. And I personally, to recount the experiences I've had with the divine would take, you know, take years. It'd take entire books. And I am writing a book series right now about my lifetimes and my memories. And a lot of that story is actually about how we can transcend great challenge and conflict and come to a deeper spirituality and communion with source and with the divine. But I will say that more recently, my experience of the divine has been, well, it's not a new experience to have a very visceral experience of the divine in my life. Meaning a very physical and emotional and mental, like very direct experience of that infinite intelligence. But the way that I've been experiencing it lately is profound and different. And it is very much what I described earlier about the recognition of everything being an embodiment of the sacred, everything being divine. And I look at this as a sort of dynamic of spiritual growth and evolution, where there were periods in my life where I was ascending, learning how to get above my body, my emotions, my mind, you know, the people and the other, and get above the self and other, and get to essentially through going upward to a state of sort of non-duality and a perception where I could see how everything is one and that we're all one, right? And getting to oneness. Now, oneness is a fantastic experience. You're in the union, you're in the oneness, you're everything. But it's also a state of completion. You're done. When you're one with everything, there is no relationship anymore. You're just all of it. You're the love of all of it. And you're no longer in any kind of dynamic. You're just the infinite, eternal existence and all that it is. And there's nothing to do. And it's all perfect. And it just is, which is awesome. But then what happens? If anybody out there has had this experience, you know that the next thing that happens is you start to actually come back down, right? You start to realize that you are the person thinking that's having this experience. And you start to go, oh my gosh, I just had a God realization experience. And then you're an I, and now you're in relationship. And now you realize you got to tell people about it. And you don't know how to do that. You know, you're coming back down into being individuated as a soul, as a being, as an individual selfhood. And no one, or very, very few spiritual teachers and shamans and religious groups are teaching you how to do that. Because the going back down, that's the goddess tradition. That's the spiritual tradition of the goddess worshiping tribes and groups from around the world, which was not about transcending everything and leaving existence and going to the infinite, but about realizing that you already are the infinite. You already are the transcendent. You are the God. You are divine. But you're coming into the experience of being an individuated being. And so it's this sacred pathway of individuation, learning how to fall in love with every relationship that you have, how to fall in love with your relationship to your food and your water and the person next door and the guy who's doing the weed eating, you know, and then the pond and the fish and the birds and the trees and the bees and the magic and blah, 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 blah. Right. So the practice and the true rising of the divine feminine spirituality that's happening on this planet is actually about us learning how to engage and descend into the world of matter with divine love. Right. And that means that we actually change the way we behave and the way we create. It means that we build things that are good for all life, not just for some limited purpose. But you realize the tech you build is sacred. The car you drive is sacred. Every single thing is a relationship between you and the goddess and the universe. And so you better damn well start honoring all of those things. And that changes the way we act. It makes us stewards. It makes us guardians. It makes us protectors. And this is why, you know, the circles of the rose and the sacredness of the sword and chalice, staff and stone, and a lot of the keys of the time of Avalon, of divine masculine protecting that which is most precious, which is the sacred rose, the creation of life, the essence of the goddess itself. And how precious that is for all of us, because it can literally be a living experience of the divine every moment in our lives, not some transcendent thing that we're trying to get to at the end of our lifetime.
Is there a way you recommend that people can access that? Maybe not everybody. I had something similar to what you're talking about, and I 100% get it. I mean, it is rather hilarious to come back at this 3D experience and wah, 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 right? But it was also profound for me as a reference point. And so I can reflect back on that and say, oh, yeah, I remember that. That was so amazing. It was hilarious too, because I was shown how I create everything. And I was shown the inception of something that became the thought, that became the belief, that became a behavior, that became an experience. And then that was perpetuated out here. And I was like, oh, that is so funny. That's, oh, I don't have to do any of that. And I, boy, when I came back, two things, I wanted to have another dream like that because it was very profound. And second of all, I had a beautiful day. I mean, a beautiful just couple of days existing in that space.
Yeah.
But if not everybody has that right now, how can they access that? That knowing, that way of being, that understanding of real relationship and divinity in all things.
Yeah. Well, it's, you know, it's not something you can just turn on overnight. We have a lot of mental frames that tell us that, you know, this ball of copper is just a ball of copper and it's just a ball of copper. That's all it is, right? Like it's just sitting there. So we have to invite the magic back into our lives a little bit and start to wonder, what is a ball of copper really? Like, what really is this thing? And take away the limited frame that we've put on it and start to realize, okay, well, it's copper, it's electromagnetic. Like, can I feel stuff coming off of it? Can I feel its electromagnetic structure? How does it feel when it's in my hand? And how does my body feel versus when it's not in my hand? We start to play with and experiment with and contemplate the dynamic of the relationship that we're in with life and matter and everything around us. Now, I have some very particular protocols for going into this in my trainings. So one of them, for example, is you learn how to separate the yin and the yang through your breath. So you basically learn by breathing what it feels like when you're kind of just breathing naturally, what it feels like when you're breathing intentionally, and what it feels like when you stop breathing and you hold your breath and you just stay extremely still. And when you go into really still, almost no breath, total receptivity, and you feel what's on your skin, you taste what's in your mouth, you hear what's coming into your ears, you start receiving everything. You go into yin state, where you're not doing anything but just taking in all the information around you. And then you breathe immediately and intensively like a lightning bolt, like, and you flex your muscles, you feel all of that. You'll notice the separation of charge immediately. You go from maybe you were sleepy, maybe you were like in whatever state or whatever. Now your body's going to be hot. You're going to feel energy. You're going to feel tingles. You'll feel life force flowing in you, which is just a kind of useful energetic jolt in the first place. But what it's really starting to get at, sorry, got somebody signal trying to call me here. my apologies, one second. When we start to practice the fact of receiving through our experience of the different elementals in matter, it begins to ground us in a really deep and profound way. In other words, what does it feel like to tune into just the weight in your body? What does it feel like to feel, as you're feeling the weight of your body, the breath flowing in and out of your body, the wind? So now you have earth and you have air. And now what does it feel like if you tune in to the moisture in your body, the water in your body? Your heart is pumping it through your skin, all the way around through your whole system. There's water in your mouth. You might sense it even in your nose or in your eyes. You can feel the moisture flow. If you're really tuned in, you can even feel your craniosacral current moving up and down your spine. And so now you have the water element, and then you begin to feel the heat in your body, the warmth in your belly, the warmth in your chest, the warmth in your head and your face and your arms. And as you tune into each of these, your thermodynamic power, your aerodynamic power, your geophysical power, and your hydrodynamic power, the elements inside of you, what you're doing is you're actually activating the different harmonics of the root chakra, and you're engaging the four directions around you. And then I tend to take people on a grounding practice where they essentially ground into the core of the earth, the heart of the planet, the very center of the heart of the planet intentionally, because the center of the earth is not just some isolated point in the middle of space. The center of the earth is what gravity is drawing you towards. And that point is being drawn by the moon around the earth, which is causing an oscillation. And so now you're in a gravitational relationship. Just the weight, just the matter in you is in a relationship to the heart of the earth and the moon cycle. And then that is linked to the core of the sun and the whole solar system. So grounding is not just about planting a few feet of roots under your feet. It's actually about surrendering to the core of the earth moon system, core of the solar system, core of the galaxy, core of the galactic cluster, core of the universe, and then essentially to the core of the infinite eternal mystery. So if you really want to ground, you're actually grounding into the divine. You're grounding into the infinite eternal. And that pillar, that ley line that we're all made of, that you don't have to do anything to experience except for relax. Like, this is it. I'm moving towards the heart of the universe when I do that. You know, like, that's what's actually happening. And when we realize that and we relax into that, we surrender into that, we are so much more grounded, and the capability that we have to hold energy, to move energy, to craft ideas, to be creative, becomes much, much stronger. And this is why the Egyptians called this the Jed, the pillar of the worlds, which is really linking our physical, emotional, mental, and spiritual worlds and bringing them into alignment, just like an eclipse. And for the eclipse, I did a little video on this method of grounding that I put out on Instagram, which was pretty fun, and a lot of people really enjoyed it. But it's that way of getting grounded, I think, has also been one of the most life-changing practices I do, because I use it before I go on stage. And I think it has everything to do with me interconnecting the layers of myself, getting out of my own way, and coming into that deeper surrendered alliance, the same way that people felt when they looked at that total solar eclipse, and all they felt was this, oh my goodness, awe and wonder, and just like, how magnificent is this that I get to be alive right now? And that's what I get from doing that work and that practice.
Oh, that's beautiful. So in your view, Adam, what do you feel or know that future technology is going to look like that's going to allow us to travel between star systems and also meet cultures from other worlds?
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, in my work, speaking at universities and doing work in physics and technology, I've for a very long time spoken about three particular technological transitions. The first is pretty easy, and everybody's pretty familiar with it. Imagine you have free localized energy. Now, ideally, that's tapping into the quantum field, the quantum vacuum field, and realizing that there is already all the energy that we need is already there. It's literally just bound up in the structure of space-time. And even without that, if you don't believe in such a thing, which is a ridiculous concept, because we know based on quantum mechanics and standard particle physics that this energy is there, there are also many other types of energy systems we could look at, like super high efficiency solar and wind and et cetera. But if you're able to distribute those kinds of energy systems around the world, you can desalinate water for free. You can basically create as many food domes and things as you want. All the cities, you know, power themselves. If you've got a little quantum battery Imagine you never have to plug in your phone again. It never dies. You don't need all of the electrical wiring anymore. We take all of that down. It's a massive shift overnight. Cars drive without fuel, so there's no more limitations in terms of filling up your car with gas or planes and so on and so forth, right? You can start to see the ripples of how big the change happens overnight in the world when we have that kind of energy system that starts to get really distributed. The second big technology is what I like to just call replication. Now, anybody who's watched Star Trek, you know what a replicator is. So the replicators, when they go into the cafe, they go over to the little machine and they type in, you know, I want this kind of cup of coffee or this kind of blue nectar from the Vulcan system or whatever, right? And the thing basically just makes little sparkles of light, and then this object generates and they have the thing. Well, this is a brilliant vision of Gene Roddenberry, but the reality of it is that we're actually already building diamonds and gemstones one atom or molecule at a time. We're already learning how to 3D print matter at a level that is just mind-blowing that most people have never seen or experienced. But where we can go with it is even further, because what's possible is that we begin to understand the geometric harmonic matrix of the energy and information in space-time itself. And now when you duplicate an object, it can literally be an exact copy of it, all the way down to the very essence and the energetics and the etheric field, and as we say, the spiritual construct of the thing, because as above, so below. And now when you can do this, sure, everybody immediately thinks, oh, okay, so I could make a tomato without growing a tomato. But really expand out and realize, well, that also means you could create gold. You can create any kind of mineral. You can create any kind of object. You no longer need to mine a planet for resources. You can produce food even if the amount of food you need is beyond your capacity to grow it or distribute it. You suddenly, the entire economic system as we know it, gone and transforms overnight. And that's already happening because of crypto and because of, you know, new ideas about economics and finance. We're already moving away from the idea that a piece of gold or a piece of material is really where the value is, that the value is actually in information and in knowledge. Because if I can make as much gold as I want or as many cups of coffee as I want, it's not about the cup of coffee anymore. It's actually about the art of the creation of the cup of coffee. So replication will change things overnight as well. And the third piece of tech is really the most fun, and that's what I call gravity control. Gravity control is the ability to essentially modulate gravitational fields around an object. Now, when you can do this, you can create an envelope around your object, a car, a plane, a vehicle, whatever it is. And if you know how to spherically modulate that gravitational field, there's essentially no more speed limit. You don't accelerate anymore. Meaning that if you wanted to wake up in the morning and go jump in your own personal private starship and basically go have breakfast on the beach eating fruit in the Pleiades, come back to Earth and go have a sushi lunch in Japan, and then go to the other side of the Earth and have a time in the middle of the night watching the auroras in Alaska, and then go to California and then to New York and then head back home, you know, for dinner, you could do that in a single day. You could go anywhere. You could be anywhere you want as fast as you want, including other star systems. And this is the complete unlimiting of humanity and our ideas about, you know, land and space and all of these different things completely change overnight. It's logistics, transportation, carrying goods from one location to another, all these very hard problems, including airports and going through TSA and all of that evaporates overnight. You have to form an entirely new system for the way that we travel and interact. And I think that's partially why you know, we're in a slow evolutionary growth process to these technologies becoming real. And I believe that we're in the final phases of completing the journey of being ready for these technologies, which will immediately, you know, bring us into the realm of being a galactic culture.
Amazing. So that was my next question. We're calling it future technology, but do you foresee a timeline for these to roll out? And I guess the other question is, with Star Trek, I've always wondered, well, what is the nutritional efficacy of these things that they're typing in and having created? I mean, is there nutritional value to that, or even properties to any of these, inherent to any of these other things that could be created? So that's a twofold question.
No, I love those. I love those. Those are great. I mean, honestly, I think that based on the way things are going, we're going to see these technologies emerge in the next 10 years. And there's a lot of projects that I'm tracking that are very close, and I have work as well in this area and papers in this area. I plan to release one of those papers to the International Aeronautics Congress, which my company has been approved to publish with. It's probably going to happen early next year. But there's a track that we're on to getting to, you know, Starship Earth, essentially, or like where we have these capacities. But, you know, is it something that just like immediately will change all of humans and all of life overnight? No, we have our own deeper inner work and spiritual work and self-development work to do. But I think we're all just getting more and more prepared for that. And some of that has to do with these dynamics with AI and dynamics around information and intelligence. And like, what is it that gives something its value, right? What makes something what it is? What makes that food have nutritional value or not? Now, if you're just trying to shove some molecules together and synthesize some molecules and some atoms, which is how we make our, you know, pharmaceutical drugs right now,
right,
there is a whole massive amount of blind spot that we have right now. And the blind spot is that we don't actually understand the harmonic energetics of the biological system, the human body, that it's a vibrating symphony of music. It's all playing music, you could think of it, but it's all different forms of light and vibration. And we're taking molecules and we're shoving them together, making unnatural syntheses, and then we wonder why the body rejects it, because we don't actually know the side effects and the things that are going to happen, because we're not paying attention to the resonance, the actual vibration of the thing. And this is why, you know, most pharmaceutical stuff that I see is just as harmful as it is helpful, because they don't understand the body's actual natural biofield. And this is a missing part in our science right now. And so when we talk about replicators and things like that, where we're going from to is not just synthesis of atoms and molecules, but actually down to the most fundamental structure of space-time itself, the level of space-time where the information structure is actually the whole picture. It's the whole thing. It's the vibrational harmonic structure that's behind what's making the atoms and the molecules and the other stuff. So I think at that point, we're going down to sort of the spirit of space-time itself. And if you duplicate something from that level, yes, it's going to have identical atomic structures, molecular structures, nutrient structures. But most importantly, it's also going to have the same etheric resonance, the same vibrational field. And that's what's really, really essential. And this is not to replace someone growing a tomato. It's just to realize that if you want to feed everybody in the world and you want to ensure that people have food in the most difficult conditions, when you don't have the power to give them a tomato or to grow it yet, it gives that opportunity. It's about solving the baseline, and it's about stopping us from tearing apart all of the beautiful mountain ranges on our planets just to get tiny amounts of minerals out that we charge ridiculous amounts for. The rape of the earth for certain molecules is ridiculous, and we can stop that now. We can begin to transition from that.
So, why do you think you, Adam, why do you think in this timeline, in this lifetime, that you work in your field and that you've become such a visible spokesperson?
Yeah, well, I'm always working on the visibility part and doing my work to try to put myself out there more. I'm just personally, I'm not, I've always been
Can I
kind of a little
stop you?
bit.
Can I just ask what,
Sure.
huh? Because like you do all these expos and all the things I go to, your name is there as a presenter and you also DJ and you, I mean, I see you everywhere and you're on Gaia TV and there are people who this would be a big deal for them to get to that level or be willing to be that visible. So I do see you differently. So can I just ask you, like, what more visibility? And it's cool. Like my brother was a Grammy award-winning composer, and I remember once saying something to him, giving him accolades, and he's like, "Oh, I'm not really quite where I dream I would be." I'm like, "What? Like, really?" But I'm curious because I think everybody's got that, the next or where they see themselves or could be. So what is that for you?
Yeah, that's a great question. It's a beautiful question. I think that for me, I've sort of been a bit allergic to the sort of obsessive I have to post about some mind-blowing thing every single day. And I see a lot of people, including some of my friends, like in the obsessive social media game in order to get visibility. And I feel like there's a lot of loss of authenticity a lot of times that comes with that. And I've just been about it. So yes, I mean, I've had this beautiful opportunity of being really recognized and seen as a speaker because I love speaking and I love sharing my knowledge and I love being entertaining for people and sharing that gifts. But considering I've been a headliner keynote of conferences for, 15 plus years, no, 20 years actually at this point, if I count like the early days and International Symposium and on Digital Earth and things like that, like you'd think I'd have more than like, less than 10,000 followers, for example, on my Instagram, or much less than that, Facebook, and et cetera, and less than 10,000 even on YouTube, right? And so I see that, there's a lot of things, including I think my own show on Gaia, which they just don't want to have me because they don't think my following is big enough because I just don't have all the social media people. So I'm aware of those sort of limitations that I've constructed for myself by choosing to reject a lot of the obsessive social media narrative because I don't like the way that it affects a lot of people, and the way that it affects me sometimes. But that being said, I also know that I've been in a journey of learning how to translate my work better, one, and two, the world kind of catching up to being ready for some of the things that I have to share. Because I mean, I've been teaching advanced magic, metaphysics, and unified physics and sciences since I was literally in high school. And in those days, I mean, not a single person in my high school knew what chi was or energy was. And I think we're in a very different place than that now. But in those days, I was literally having to teach in the conditions where no one had ever even had any kind of spiritual experience or metaphysics. There was no 5D terminal. There was no new age stuff. I mean, that none of that was even there yet. And so we've come a very long way. And along that trail, I think we've gotten a lot more people waking up to what's real and what's true in the world and what's possible and their energetic bodies and their power as creators and the secret came out. And, all of these things have happened to move the needle and where people are at. And I've seen and watched literally these massive campaigns being constructed to divide and conquer and stop that awakening process from happening. by getting people to believe things that are very false narratives. Flat Earth is my favorite one to pick on, because if you believe the Earth is flat, there's literally no core of the planet. You literally have nothing to ground into. So you're the most ungrounded person you can imagine when you do not know how to connect to the Earth itself. Wow. And when you're ungrounded, guess what happens to your discernment? Guess what happens to your ability to sort out truth from falsehood? A lot of big key capacities in ourself get lost when that happens. And I think that's also why, you know, it's very difficult, and it becomes an emotional attachment for someone that's developed this, you know, followed down that rabbit hole and just believed what they saw and thought, wow, I don't actually understand this. So maybe it is flat and maybe this is true. And then experience this level of disconnection and more and more judgment, and people like, what? Like, are you kidding me? You know, and people literally posting questions about the photos the space station took of the shadow of the moon on the Earth. You know, you have 40 million people see a lunar eclipse, which the dynamics of the movement of the shadow, the positioning of the thing, and all that requires the Earth to be a sphere and the moon to be what it is and the sun to be what it is. And you still have people going, is that even real? Was that photoshopped? You know, and it's a disconnection from the dynamic nature of reality. And it's a really intensive one, because when you're in that state of disconnection, it's very scary. You're very scared because you've gone along and you think that you found something real that nobody else knows about. And you judge them and you're like, no, they must all be wrong, because I know that NASA's been lying to us. I know there's falsehoods out there, and they're right. There have been lies for sure, but it's not that the Earth's flat. You know, it's other stuff, right? So I've seen these waves of resistance come up, and I just speak this kind of as we're wrapping up today, because I really want to illustrate that in my own spiritual journey, I've had to develop a lot of careful discernment and logic in order to see what self-references itself as true and confirms itself as true, and is backed by experience and is backed by my relationship with others and is backed by the dynamics that I can see, and that every piece of it fits, versus things that don't have that. And there's a lot of people, just because of the nature of humanity and the nature of ego, that will share a lot of things that do not have that. They don't have a logical backing. They don't have a truth backing. They don't have a self-referencing confirmation in the universe around us. And you can feel the difference. You can feel it. But feeling it can be confusing if our own emotional bodies and our own sense of anchor in the truth and our own groundedness is not there as much. So I think time and again, we have to learn how to get more grounded, get more capable of good discernment, ask the right questions, and be willing to hear other perspectives, because ours might be off. It might be wrong. It always might be. And we have to be willing to look at that, and to continue do this, the seeking work and the progress to grow, because all of us have ideas sometimes that are not fully confirmed in self-referencing by the truth of the universe.
So Glastonbury, Portal to Ascension, and the UK in September, you and I will both be there. Some other phenomenal people as well. What are you going to be talking about, Adam?
Well, I'm going to be getting into the truth of Avalon, and the reality that, you know, the round table and the priestesses of Avalon were not Christian. And I'm sorry, but a lot of the stories and a lot of the locations that are talked about as Avalon, including Glastonbury, are not even the locations where these events took place. And we know that, and we can validate that both historically as well as through the mythological stories that we've heard. So it's a beautiful and a tender opportunity to reconnect to some powerful places, because Glastonbury is a very powerful place. It's got powerful ley lines. It's an ancient spot on the Earth. And we're going to be leveraging and connecting to that field. But I think it's also important, again, to do the discernment work, to ask the right questions and to begin to pull the right threads. And so I'll be doing a lot of revealing of some of my own journey and my own work with the time of Avalon there, and revealing what, you know, the dragon thing is really all about, and the ancient traditions that actually were behind the knowledge and the wisdom of Avalon, and where those come from, and actually confirm pieces of that story from the Sword of Light of Nuada that became Caliburn to become Excalibur, to the Cauldron of the Dagda that eventually became known as the Holy Grail, to, you know, the Spear of Lug, for example, which Christianity translated as the Spear of Destiny that pierced Jesus, but in fact was an ancient tool passed down from the Tuatha De Danann and carried on to the time of Avalon. And so there are a lot of things that we can correct that are bits of mistakes and errors and really disinformation that was created, because as many of us know, there was a lot of disinformation campaigns created by different religions as they spread around the planet in order to debase the original indigenous traditions and their truth and the tribal groups. And, you know, they just called them barbarians, and that all of their stuff was of the devil and false. And there was a lot of systematic eradication of deep indigenous wisdom around the world. So I'm going to be doing that for us and for the Irish lineages and the Nordic lineages and the ancient magical traditions of those lands, and really get real and talk about what those traditions actually looked like and what we're missing when we think we celebrate the Irish through things like St. Patrick's Day.
Beautiful. And so folks, if you want to go and be with us in Glastonbury's sacred site, please check out the link so you can get tickets. I would definitely book soon. And also, if you want to learn more about Adam, connect with him on all his platforms, go to adamapollo.com. And Adam, this is Dare to Dream. What are you next, Dare to Dream? Future dreams and goals.
Thank you so much. Well, I'm deeply focused on a couple things. One is getting my first book out, which I heard you have some magic with that. I'd love to maybe share with you my book proposal, and you can let me know what you think, or if you've got great agents that you've worked with in the past, I'd love for you to see that. So I'm dreaming of seeing my book published this year, and that would be a huge gift to me and light me up in big ways. And the other big project that I'm on is CoreNexus, which is my social operating system dedicated to gamifying regenerative impact. And I believe that this system actually has the power to get the people doing good in the world, making money by doing good, and getting rewarded for doing good in really profound ways. And so I'm very excited to be progressing that project. And I am just entering another financial raise right now, another round of that. I've raised almost $1 million so far, and I've invested many millions of my own time and energy and money and my teams into this project. And we're now in the raise that we need just to basically complete the major, you know, beta launch and financial systems launch inside of the project. So it's a really exciting spot to be in. And if any of you out there are investors or know of people investing in tech projects that involve AI, metaverse, integrative systems, and real world impact, please reach out to me. I'd love to hear from you. And you can find out more about that at corenexus.is, CoreNexus.is.
Adam, thank you so much for coming on today and for all you shared.
Thank you. Such an honor and pleasure, Debbie. Thanks for having me.
Always. And I end today's show with this quote from Sadhguru: "The highest force in existence is consciousness, and you are that. Consciousness is not an act, not an idea, not even a quality. It is the very basis of creation." Subscribe to this number one transformation conversation, Dare to Dream with Debbie Dashinger. Leave a comment, share. If you're listening on podcasts and you want to see what we look like, you can go to Spotify and watch the video, or youtube.com/Debbie Dashinger. Next week on the show is going to be the amazing Tom Kenyon, sound healer, channeler, and author of many, many books, including the Magdalene Manuscripts. And just hearkening back to what We said at the beginning, Adam and I, if you would like a different perspective on sacred sexuality, I highly recommend you read the very easy to read, but very profound Magdalene manuscripts. And additionally, I also am going to remind all of us about the divinity in everything, in you, in everything you see. Remember that in each moment. Thanks for joining us today.
To contact the award-winning syndicated Dare to Dream radio show, go to debbiedashinger.com. Keep your excellent feedback and comments coming. Your host, Debbie Dashinger, is an expert at goal achievement, a media personality, an international best-selling author, and a keynote speaker. Debbie leads high-quality teleseminars on how to achieve goals, how to be a self-published best-selling author, and how to get booked on radio. All classes are at debbiedashinger.com. Debbie's best-selling books are Dare to Dream, This Life Counts, sold on Amazon, and her second book, Wisdom to Success, The Secrets to Accomplish All Your Dreams, sold online at all bookstores. Tune in again to hear the next inspiring interview guest who has turned their vision into a successful reality. Want more support in making your dreams come true? Go to debbiedashinger.com. That's www.debbiedashinger.com. You'll see videos, MP3s, archived interviews, and amazing products sharing the secret steps to making your dreams come true. Remember to dream big with every expectation that your dream will become real. Dreams are free, so free your dreams. What do you dare to dream?
Here I'm standing now.